So we're back. Lloyd, welcome back.
Thank you, Scott.
Lloyd left the room for 30 seconds here, but he's back, and it's strange. He just wanted to get a drink of water. But when people say they're going to leave, you never know if they're coming back. So, and you know, at the same time, I pulled out another daily reading. Actually, this is put out by Stephen Arterburn and David Stoop, and they're a couple of my heroes. They're the guys who put the whole life recovery system of books and tools together for us to make a difference in lives here. And this one's called Take Your Life Back Day by Day. And day 134, which if you have a day of the year calendar, you'll know is today's date, May the 14th, 2019. And this one's called Who's Calling the Shots? You know, and in the end, we sort of have to defer to a greater power of sorts, whatever we happen to call that power. In my case, that's God, Almighty God. But who's calling the shots? And then there's a proverb here that's referenced, and it says, "We may throw the dice, but the Lord determines how they fall." And that's almost the answer to what you and I have been talking about here all along, Lloyd. You know, we sort of do our best, and sometimes we feel a little heroic, and then you know, and then we're in another area of our life, and something that we think we have a real good handle on just goes sideways. So you just never know, you know. And while I'm reading things here, the other reference material we use weekly here is called the Life Recovery Devotional, you know, working in tandem with the Life Recovery Bible. But today it talks about bondage. You know, again, day 14 in the fifth phase, or the May phase for us, means May 14th. So denial leads to bondage, and denial really is being dishonest with ourselves, I believe, but it's being dishonest in the sense that we don't mean to be. We're not trying to be dishonest, but if we're in denial, you know, we don't know what we're in denial of, right? So, 'cause we're not seeing it. So it's a form of dishonesty, but it's not a blatant decision. It's like it happens. It's like, I don't see what you see. You know, you see a weakness in me and I don't see it. So I live as though I don't have it, you know? And I think it's the same in what we've been talking about. But anyway, I'm just going to read the last little part of this and then we can get back to our discussion. It says, spiritual forces swaying our lives have their roots in either truth or deceit. Now, truth leads to freedom, and deceit leads to bondage and death. So, denial is a lie that keeps us in slavery. But again, it's a lie that we don't make on purpose. It's a lie that we don't see. So, when we're slaves to our addictions, we lose the right to choose any other way of life. And folks, when we say addictions, we mean anything that kind of has a hold on you, you know. Addiction is the blatant, having crossed the line thing that allows someone to not make decisions over their own will. You know, we have free will, but it seems many cannot exercise it. And that's where we come into all these discussions that Lloyd and I are having today. So to choose any other way of life, it's only when we break the denial somehow we have to see, and I don't know how we're made to see. We use the inventory, and that often brings out parts of us that we never thought we had. You know, as I said earlier, to me, it was like, I've been saying for years, you know, what other people think of me is none of my business.
Yeah.
But do I really believe that? And do I, you know, can I actually walk around not caring what other people say about me? And I don't think I can totally. I have a good sense of it, but not total. So, but there's only a chance of real freedom if we can kind of see ourselves clearly. So this, it's a tough area of concern. So anyway, that being aside, back to jail, fentanyl, you know, what addiction is versus compulsion versus decision, you know. And we're this has been part of for a long time. People like Lloyd and I have been around these kind of rooms, people who can't seem to make their own decisions, and for some reason, whether it's a godly thing or not, we've been allowed to make some and to be able to live by it and hopefully help some others. But there are a lot of things in life, folks, that create the grounds for us to make our decisions, whatever they may be, and a lot of things grab us. And one of the things the program talks about is money, you know, power, property, and prestige. Now, you know, do we give away a lot to have some power? Do we give away a lot to have some property? Do we give away a lot so that people will think highly of us? Prestige, you know. So those three P's can really grab our lives in a hard way. And all of these things are really things that can kind of keep us down, hold our lives at bay, and in a sense we're slaves to them, and to be free of them is the only true freedom. So, you know, is it TV? Is it body? Is it education? Is it money? Is it religion? Is it prestige? You know, is it my looks? Is it authority? You know, and we're told we've got to, you know, bow down to authority. But again, are we in denial? Do we see authority as authority? I mean, I had a problem. I still do with that. Authority and me don't get along, you know. If I didn't have my own deal, I'm in trouble, because being subservient just didn't work well for me. You know, it never did. I don't think I ever had to at home much. I was the oldest, and it was more born quickly after, and I just sort of did whatever I wanted, and I was allowed, you know. And it was like, you know, so Scott went off and, you know, sinned in every way possible, and didn't think he had any real authority. And when they try to impose authority on a guy like that, it's a problem. You know, my son was the same. He took it to extreme, ended up in jail, and, you know, an addict, and eventually died of a fentanyl overdose. But same thing. So, you know, of all these kinds of things, when you look at these things, what grabs you? I mean, what, you know, what keeps you going? I mean, what drives you? You know, like, I could say blatantly, what do you think has a bit of a hook on you? You know, and I kind of know what it does for me, but I want freedom so much. I mean, I want God and freedom. The rest doesn't matter much to me. So, but that's where I am at this age and so on. So can you relate to any of that?
Well, I grew up on the streets, Scott. So, you know, appearance was meant a lot for me. Like, even though I was using, I was still dressing properly, and, you know, I made sure, mm-hmm. you know, how I looked. How I looked was really big for me. Mm. So I'm not too sure if, you know, if I was bad off, or, you know, like really, really, you know, like a really bad addict. I don't know. I'd walk into a room and people thought I was an undercover police or something, because, you know, I was dressed so nicely, but I was, you know, I was partaking in what everybody else was partaking in. So
you probably had a real suite in the missions, really.
Yeah, you know, a few times I almost got shot. You know, like near the end of my using, I was sick and tired not only of the drugs, but I was sick and tired of people thinking that I was a police and you know, want to shoot me.
It's interesting, folks. You got to get a picture of this, because Lloyd opted for, you know, living in those in hostels and that kind of thing in missions or whatever. Yet he had $1,000 worth of clothes on, and wondered why he didn't fit. You know,
there's a lot of times when they were telling me that you know, I shouldn't be in here. Yeah. Like, and a lot of times they were telling me that I'm making more than the staff,
and you were,
and yeah, and yeah. So they thought I didn't.
It wasn't even illegal.
But yeah, you know, I don't know why, Scott. I don't know why I was living like that, you know. But it just came a time where, mm-hmm. you know, I knew it was wrong, and I knew what was going to happen if I didn't turn it around. Yeah. And, you know, and I'm trying to study my friends that are in addiction right now, and trying to help them, but it seems like I can't, because, you know, I'm realizing that you don't just walk out the door. You don't just leave the drugs on the table. You don't just give it all up. And I can't. Mm. I just can't figure out why it's so hard. And and like you were saying, scientifically, it's probably an imbalance. In the brain.
Yeah, that's right. We're different. I mean, that's the whole thing. And it's like I was joking, you know, no wonder you feel like you don't fit, you know, you're like a millionaire in the mission that doesn't feel too well. But here you're making good money, you know, and quite a lot of money. And yet, for whatever reason, you choose that way of life, because I think you're always sort of looking after yourself in a
way.
You know what I mean? Like, you say, well, I like to dress well, and you know, and I like this and that, but you know, if I dress well and I pay $1,500 a month for an apartment, I'm, you know, it's not going to work well with my habits, you know. And I don't know what your habits cost you, but obviously substantial.
Substantial, yes.
'Cause you didn't save a lot of dough, but you could make $100 an hour sometimes, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
$100, 120 on holidays and stuff. And yeah, my girlfriend Lisa May, she was saying, like, I can't believe you're living in a shelter. Like, you know, you're working at Chrysler and you're making $110,000 a year and you're living at a shelter. And, you know, I would work 6 days and 7 days a week while living in that shelter. And it was just a sick way of thinking. Like, you know, I can save money on rent and have that $1,500 for the drug dealer and, you know, instead of paying rent. And
I can see that, though, you know. It's starting to make sense to me, because looking from outside, you know, like, you're abandoned at the earliest age to figure things out for yourself. You figure them out, you become a great survivor, and you see the system, you know, a little more clearly than a lot of people do, and you see it from a lot of different perspectives. You know, like, I'm not going back to where I'm in trouble anymore. I'm not going back to where I'm not going to have enough of this or enough of that or whatever. Even if I decide to use this amount of drugs and so on, I'm still going to have enough to, you know, to look the way I want to look, to be able to go to work. And so a lot going on in your head. It's not going on, I think, in a lot of other heads.
I think it's my bad start, really, in life that really propelled me to do good while I was on the street and stuff. Yeah. Like, you know, I didn't make myself, like, go that way too far or that way too far. I always thought about, you know, tomorrow.
Which is interesting, because that is not the addictive
behavior. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. You're just thinking about today.
Not at all.
Now.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I never thought about now.
No.
You know, no, never. I always thought about, like, you know, you know, what's coming around the corner next, or, you know, what tomorrow?
Yeah. What if? What if?
Yeah.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. That's probably, you know, this is a. We're learning more as we talk than we learn anywhere else. But I love the sense of that. I mean, just looking at, how did you eat, for instance, like, while you were going through all of this? I mean, did you go and...
Well, I ate pretty good. I ate pretty good. I actually never ate what they ate in the shelter.
No.
You know, I would pass that up and go have, you know, Mandarin or something, or Red Lobster or something like that. Well, they were eating stuff from government-made trays.
There's no wonder.
But it's good that I can
you.
Laugh. It's good that I can laugh about it now, because, you know, a lot of my friends have gone the same route who are not here anymore. And, you know, I'm just grateful that, you know, I don't know if it's chemical imbalance or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, I think my bad start kind of made me aware of what's going to happen if I keep, you know, on this road. And that kind of made me walk away, made it a little easier for me to walk away. And now I'm trying to assess my friends and wondering why they can't walk away. And now you're just telling me about the scientific imbalance. And it's just, I don't know what we're going to do with this fentanyl.
I don't know. Like, it's
car fentanyl.
It's beyond reason. Like, really, you know, I've been telling people, and I'm glad you brought that up again, because in the jails, where you'll be going shortly too, it's out of sight. I mean, it's every death is fentanyl. It's almost, you don't even have to ask half the time. You know, it's, you know, it used to be, you know, all sorts of different things. Today, it's fentanyl. Fentanyl is what's killing everybody, you know. So, you know, what do we do? And for people who don't realize the recent bust in New York, well, a couple months now, I guess, enough fentanyl, probably mixed with carfentanil, it usually is now, to kill 59 million people, you know.
Wow.
Now, you know, they say that based on, you know, the stuff hitting the streets, being cut a certain way and blah, 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 and a certain number of people selling it and all that. But what I'm thinking is what I thought of right away, was, you know, with these, you know, these terrorists out there everywhere, you know, someone's going to see that this fine powder can be, you know, utilized or put into all different kinds of things like food sources, water, ventilation systems. And I mean, an awful lot of people could be gone in a, you know, in a nanosecond sort of thing if any of these things happen. So it's not the guy with the needle only that's the problem with this fentanyl, carfentanyl. It's the whole world. It needs to take a real hard look at this before there's one huge disaster and, you know, everybody who takes a drink of water drops dead sort of thing. So, I mean, carfentanyl, folks, is so powerful that if you run across any of that powder somewhere and you put a finger in it, chances are you're going to die.
Wow.
You know,
it's
like
that powerful.
Yeah, your pores will absorb enough of this powerful elephant tranquilizer, is what it was designed to do. You know, something that weighs 50 times what you weigh, it's going to settle that down. What's it going to do to you? You know, so. But anyway, they use this analogy where you've got three vials. We'll say the types of vials that when you give blood, you know, that give people an idea of the size. And we'll say that one was a third full of morphine, which would be enough to kill a person. And the next one was fentanyl. There'd probably be maybe an eighth of an inch or so of powder in the bottom of the vial. And then they would show carfentanyl would have 3 or 4 granules in the bottom. And all those doses would do exactly the same thing, would kill a person. So you can imagine with the three little granules, how many people it could kill if you piled enough into to fill the vial as much as you had the first one full of morphine. So you might be able to kill 1,000 people with that much carfentanyl.
Wow.
You know what I mean? So and then to realize that dealers might get this stuff, try and mix it somehow. And I mean, there's no way, you know, unless you have scientific equipment and analyses to mix this stuff in a proper proportion, because you don't know what's going into each sort, you know,
yeah,
into each bunch. It's like when they try and lace coke with fentanyl.
Yeah.
You know, if one guy has enough coke to kill 4 people, someone else has, you know, because of the fentanyl that's in it, and the next guy gets a line that has no fentanyl in it. You can't just mix up bags and stuff and expect that because you put 10% of this and 90 of that, that it's going to mix properly. You'd think it would, but it doesn't. When they take a scope that can only record one of the drugs, it shows immediately that, you know, one line will have a bunch in it, the next line will have enough for one high, and the next one for 2 or 3, and then enough to kill 6 people. So there's no way to measure this stuff like we got guys on the street who are doing that. So
yeah,
it's,
but
it's
that wasn't around when I was using. I never even heard the word fentanyl or carfentanyl.
Yeah.
That's all, you know. Yeah. The first time I heard the word fentanyl is when the entertainer Prince died.
Yeah.
Before that, I didn't even know it was a word.
Yeah. And now we find out that so many, you know, key people in the entertainment industry anyway have died from fentanyl.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you mentioned Jackson. Did he die from that too?
Michael Jackson was propofol.
Oh, okay.
The sleeping.
When you're, okay.
But Tom Petty, well-known entertainer, he died... he had fentanyl in his system, too, when he died.
And you know what's really interesting? I'll tell you. And everybody, or 99 out of 100 people, call it fentanyl. It's fentanyl.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, and because it's spelled F-E-N-T-A-N-Y-L. And you would swear it's spelled O-L, right?
Yeah.
Because that's how everybody says it. And maybe that's a use, too. I don't know. But I've been looking at this because I know. I mean, I read the forensics, the reports on my son when he died of a fentanyl overdose 7 years ago. 7 years ago, this June 8th coming. And, you know, and I looked at it and I thought, well, why does it really call fentanyl? But anyway, that's a whole other story. Who cares? One of the things it says in Scripture says, if you are truly my helpers, I think it uses the word disciples, it says, you will be faithful to my teachings. In other words, you know, if you're really with me, you know, you'll do the stuff that I tell you works. Now I'm talking God, not Scott, obviously. And then, you know, and so the thing is really, okay, if you're faithful, you'll know the truth. You know, this is what it says. And then it says, thirdly, it says, and if you know the truth, you'll be set free. So we've been talking about being slaves to booze, to drugs, to sex, to how we look, to property, power, to authority, to being busy, to how we look, to how we think, etc., etc. Almost any one of these things can create a slave-servant kind of scenario. You know, the power being the thing, and the servant or the slave being the people. So, you know, like, what are we in slavery to, and how do we get out of it? We need a spiritual component in our life. You know, if we believe this anyway, and we need, you know, we need a connection to something higher in order to know that we can be free of this stuff. That's why it's interesting when we think of you walking out of a room and just, you know, and like you were saying, you were really, when they say being sick and tired of being sick and tired, you really were, and that was it, you know, and that was the end of it. And then on the way up here, when I said to you, well, what about when you were in recovery, in a recovery house and that kind of stuff, and you said, well, you basically went there because somebody in a professional capacity thought it would be good for you, sort of thing. So,
yeah.
Or maybe to keep your job. I don't know what it was then. But anyway, so you, like you said, you didn't go there for yourself. You go there because it was easiest thing to do, sort of thing.
Yeah, not at first. I didn't go there for myself. I never thought I had an issue. Yeah. You know, I thought I was had it under control.
I think you did, though. That's the fun part.
I did have it under control.
This was, folks, it looked like an addict under control. I mean, that defies everything. People are called addicts because they're not in control.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think being honest with yourself is a big component. I put that here. But in order to be honest, you got to work through all this denial. And how do you do that unless you get involved with some kind of program that forces us to do what we're doing. We're doing it on the air. So folks out there, by the way, who don't know us, one or two of us is more than likely going to stop by the Hummingbird Hub out here. And you know what? I've forgotten the address. Jay, do you remember?
I think it's 6331.
You've got it right. That's what I remember now. 6331 Main Street in Stouffville, or Stouffville Road, if you come in that way. But anyway, we'll probably drop by there and say hello to anybody who happens by, and anybody who you know, feels like sharing something. And folks, to find a place where you can share, where nobody's going to comment on what you share, and where nobody's going to give you advice that you never asked for, you're probably not going to find one until you find a real good sharing place. And that would be, I would suggest, you know, some sort of 12-step meeting or our own sharing the burden. And I promise you, you're safe to share in there. And it's one of the things we say when we do our meetings. We say, you know, what you hear here, folks, what you see here, folks, when you leave here, let it stay here. So that's important to us, as is anonymity. It's as important to us as you tell us it is to you. So with that, I think we better take another break here. Maybe, I don't know, we're going to pay some more bills, I guess, Jay.
We always got to pay the bills. some more.
We'll be back here on 102.9 FM. And again, every Tuesday morning, 10 a.m., live discussion of recovery, of various kinds of recovery. And in many cases, just finding out who we are and finding a good way to do that. So we'll be back shortly.